You're listening to the Sportsman's Nation Podcast Network, powered by Interstate Batteries. From your truck to your trail camera, Interstate Batteries has you covered. Visit your local Interstate Battery store today or online at interstatebatteries.com. Interstate Batteries, outrageously dependable.
Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to the Iowa Sportsman Podcast, the number one source for hunting and fishing information, strategy and tactics, as well as conversations surrounding conservation efforts and other outdoor activities in the great state of Iowa. I'm your host, Dan Johnson, and this episode of the Iowa Sportsman Podcast starts right now. All right, everybody, welcome back to the Iowa Sportsman Podcast. I'm your host, Dan Johnson, and today we have another awesome podcast. We're going to be talking with Jessica Graham, and Jessica is going to walk us through some food plotting myths, right? She wrote an article recently, something like top 10 food plotting myths, and basically we're going to debunk all these myths, and we're going to talk about her food plot strategy for whitetail hunting throughout the entire year. And it is spring after all, and spring is when a lot of people start paying attention to food plots, getting their food plots prepped and ready to plant. And depending on what seed you're going to be planting now, June, July, August, maybe even early September, you're going to want to start planting those food plots. And but, you know, right now a lot of people start thinking about that. And that's what today's podcast is about. Real short intro today. All I want to say is if you haven't already, please go to the iowasportsman.com, right? iowasportsman.com, and check out all the content they have on their website. It also allows you to subscribe to the magazine. Tons of great information on that in that magazine as well. So please go and subscribe to that. Go to iTunes or wherever you download the podcast and leave a review. And we want to hear what you have to say, right? So go ahead and get that done. Go to the Iowa Sportsman Facebook page and like it. And soon there's going to be a page on Instagram as well. So keep an eye out for that. Other than that, I think we're good to go here. Let's get into today's podcast. All right. On the phone with me now, Jessica Graham. How are we doing?
I'm doing well, thanks. How about yourself?
I can't complain. I tell you, the weather in Iowa keeps getting better and better and better. And that makes me happy because now we are a long way from winter, it seems like, already. And I'm just excited for the springtime activities. Are you a turkey hunter by chance?
Yeah, I enjoy turkey hunting. I plan to go out a little bit later in the season, and hopefully I can have some success.
Yeah, absolutely.
How about yourself?
I went out with my wife. We do this little tradition every year where we go to my mom's and my stepdad's, and we go fishing, we do turkey hunting, we eat a lot of food, we play a lot of cards. And so this year I was able to call my wife into a really good tom, and she smoked it, drilled it, and then it was tough for me to get on a bird. But we got a 50% success rate's okay with me, and we had a really good time.
That's awesome, and that actually sounds like the ultimate like destination hunt, you know.
Yeah.
You got lodging and good company.
That's
and
right.
You can hunt with your wife.
That's right. Now, when it comes to deer hunting, I'm a little bit more serious on that end. You know, turkey is one of those low-pressure hunts. You don't really have to worry about anything. I don't care if I kill one or not because I've killed enough already. But don't get me wrong, it's always nice to get a turkey. But, like, my mind's always on whitetails.
Yeah, I'm with you there. I like turkey hunting and everything else, but I really get excited in the fall when it comes to deer. And actually, I really get excited for the spring so we can plant some food plots for the deer.
Yeah, Yeah, and that's exactly what we're going to be talking about today is you recently wrote an article in the Iowa Sportsman magazine that I wanted to talk to you about, and that is 10 myths about food plots. And we got some myths here that we're going to debunk and we're going to talk about today. But before we get into that, why don't you tell everybody where you're from and what do you do for a living?
Oh, sure. So I grew up in South Central Iowa, and I was able to stay kind of around the area. I moved a little closer to Des Moines, and I grew up on a farm, and I've always been in the ag industry, and actually right now I'm working with crop insurance out of the Des Moines area.
Oh, nice, nice. And I'm sure, oh man, with all the flooding we've had and wet weather, I'm sure you're busy.
Oh, yeah, and I really feel for some guys this year with the cold, wet weather, like you're saying.
Yeah. Well, I think the cold weather plus the wet weather, and then we had some really strong winds. I drove by a bean field this past weekend during turkey season, and it was flat from wind damage. And then probably the snow that was on top of it, too. So I don't even know if they can get a combine underneath it to get it.
That's not a fun deal at all, is it?
No. Not at all. Not at all. But we're going to talk about something on a little bit of the brighter side of things, and that's food plots today. I take it you wrote this article. That must mean you have some kind of experience in food plotting. How much food plotting do you do in a typical year?
Well, a fair amount. I hunt with, I'm pretty fortunate to come from a hunting family. So I always get a scheme with my uncle, and he has, there's probably close to 1,000 acres in southern Iowa, that we do food plots on there. And then over at my parents, I grew up on a farm, and they own a fair-sized acreage, so we do food plots there. And then, just a couple of years ago, my husband and I bought a small acreage, so then I get a do some food plots on a small scale.
So gotcha.
It's pretty fun. I enjoy it, but I get to see a lot of different, tracks, big food plots, small food plots,
right,
destination food plots, and then kind of some smaller kill plots,
right,
some people refer to them.
Right. I got a buddy who, he bought a piece of land and he started doing food plots, and he said, man, you just learn so much when you start working with the earth and start doing the habitat improvement and trying to make these food plots grow. Cause if you don't do it right, then they're not going to grow. And then it's a waste of your time, energy, and money. So just right off the bat, what are some of the biggest things or takeaways or learning experiences per se that you've had over the years planting food plots?
Some of the biggest takeaways from planting food plots, when you're talking about smaller seeds, so radishes and turnips have little tiny seeds, and clover is a small seed. It's pretty easy to bury that seed too deep in the ground. And what happens then is you bury it too deep, and then it doesn't want to come up because all that stored energy is in that tiny little seed, and we're talking like the size of the tip of your pin sometimes.
Right.
And that doesn't have enough energy to propel it to the top. So sometimes burying seed too deep is a big, I guess, a downfall of planting food plots, or that's an easy mistake to do.
Yeah. Has that been something that you've been guilty of in the past?
Yeah, I've done it once, and like just like your friend was saying, it's something you don't want to ever do again. So just chalk it up to learning and know not to do it next time, or learn from someone else. I guess it's a little cheaper to learn from someone else's mistakes.
That is a fact. That's a fact. So when it comes to food plotting, right, you're still under, like, you can do all the work, you can do everything right, and still you're at the mercy of Mother Nature, right? I think it was a couple summers ago, we had no rain for many months, especially in southern Iowa, right? We had a huge drought throughout some of those counties. So how do you prepare for something like that where, you know, you got to get these food plots in at some time and you're going to do it, but you don't know if you're going to get rain or you're going to get too much rain and wash the seed base out or a variety of different things?
So you're asking me, how do you prepare for failure? Honestly, the worst thing you can do is to do nothing. Because you look back at how your season was last year, and you got to ask yourself, are you okay with your season peaking as it was last year? Or do you want to try to improve your land, attract more animals, more deer? And you just got to get in the right mindset sometimes. And it's very discouraging. A couple of years ago when that happened, I remember I had my husband, we saw a rain cloud coming. So I had him, we had everything filled up and ready to go. And I was just so afraid we were going to miss that rain that we were planting in a downpour, trying to catch that rain. And sometimes when things like that happen, because I think that was dry, it's dry about all summer. Am I right?
Yeah, I'm thinking there was no rain from early June to September, I thought.
Yeah, and so in that case, what happened for us is we had soybeans planted, and the soybeans just sat in the dirt. They didn't ever grow. They didn't germinate. And when that one rain cloud came, it wasn't about September. So what we turned around is we're going to put in, you know, instead of having beans, we're going to turn around and do some fall food plots, and plant some plants that you can plant in the fall. So think in brassicas, or even you can do winter wheat or rye. We just happen to do brassicas is what we had on hand. So sometimes your initial plan fails because of Mother Nature. It's not anything anyone did wrong. It just, you can't grow anything when there's no rain. So we just had to switch our plan.
Right. That makes sense. So we got myths that we got to talk about, right? And I'm just going to go,
yeah.
I'm going to go through the article on each heading, and we're just talk about, you know, talk about what you found out. And that first one is, number one, food plots cost a lot of money. Is that true?
Well, they can cost a lot of money, but they don't have to cost a lot of money. How's that?
Yeah.
For instance, there's, you know, you walk into any hunting store and there's a plethora of products on the shelf, and it's really nice because it's prepackaged proprietary blends. But you're also going to pay for someone else. I mean, you're paying for that blend. You're paying for someone else going in, measuring out the correct amount of seed, and then packaging it. So there are some things you can do to help, you know, cheapen the load, because I'm, you know, if you're like me, you've got a full-time job and you got bills to pay, and you don't want to put a whole bunch of money into food plots, especially when there's not an economic return out of it, right? We're planting food plots to feed the wildlife.
Yeah.
So one thing you can do is some stores like, you know, Tyson's or Co-op's, you know, grain elevators, they'll sell, you know, radishes, oats, different species in bulk. And sometimes you can get them just to sell you a few pounds of radishes or turnips, and it ends up costing you, when you put that mix together, it ends up costing a lot less than if you were to go to the store and to buy it.
Okay.
So that's kind of one of the myths, is they don't have to cost a lot of money. You can do some research, find out the correct seeding rates, and then go ahead and buy the seed yourself.
Right. And I've never really, I've planted one food plot my whole life, and I overseeded it. And I don't think I laid down the fertilizer the right way. And it just, they grew, but they didn't grow into food. You know what I mean? So they stopped growing at some point. And I always had this, this thought process where, you know, it's just a food plot is just not seed, right? Because you have to work the soil, and it's best to use, you know, like I used a, I forget what it was, like a harrow. And then I had one of my buddy's tractors, and that's how I did it, right? So, you know, like you said, using a tractor, you know, that costs money for, you know, diesel fuel or gas, and then you have the equipment and all that, you know, all the big equipment. Is there anything that you can do to minimize that cost other than sweat equity?
To minimize the cost of, well, for say, if you don't have access to, you know, a tractor or a disc and the right tools, because that's kind of the problem a lot of folks run into is, you know, they're not farmers. They don't want to go out and buy a tractor. That's a huge expense. There are some things you can do. One, with minimal equipment or minimal cost, you can look into what's called frost seeding. Are you very familiar with frost seeding by chance?
Yep. Sprinkle the seed on top of the snow or when it's still cold out so that as this, you know, as the ground thaws and freezes, it works its way down into the soil.
Yeah, exactly right. And when you do some frost seeding, you don't need to cultivate the ground. A lot of times it works better if you have a nice seed bed ready, but sometimes you just got to do what you got to do. And frost seeding, I mean, it's great because it helps, you know, especially that small seed like clover. It helps kind of break the dormancy of clover.
Okay.
And kind of work it into the ground. You don't get it buried too deep, which we talked about earlier.
Yeah.
And how that's a problem because it can't come to the top. So when it comes to weed control, you know, if you have access to a mower or if you have a farmer or someone that's willing to come out and brush cut, that would help. I mean, that helps break the canopy of the grasses and helps control the weed, too. So that's another way you can go for weed control.
Yeah.
Or, you know, there's herbicides that target only grasses. So you can spray, chemically control some weeds. Some herbicides are restricted use and you have to have a special license or have them applied by someone with a special license. But what that does is actually I took a pot that was probably 25 to 50% clover and ended up turning it into almost a pure clover stand just by letting that remaining clover go to seed and spraying out the grass.
Yeah.
So did that answer your question well enough?
Yeah, good enough.
As far as, okay.
Good enough. All right, number two, all food sources are equal. What did you mean by that?
I think we've all kind of noticed that, deer hunting particularly is different. Food sources peak in attractiveness during different times of the year.
Right.
When soybeans are just coming up, you can't hardly keep the deer off of them. They just want to mow them all down when they're young and tender. But it kind of seems like, when they start to defoliate, when the weeds start turning yellow, Dan, you do a lot of hunting. Have you noticed deer kind of tend to, I mean, it's not their favorite time to eat soybeans. It's the other times when they're green or when they're,
right.
Just the pods.
Yeah, I run into this scenario where in September I drive by some of these soybeans fields that still have some green pockets on them. I'm like, I can't wait to go hunt that October 1st. And then October 1st hits and dang near all the leaves are on the ground already.
Yeah. Yeah. So then, something else, they're eating something else. The deer didn't stop eating, right? They're going somewhere else. So we got to find out where is that food source? You know, sometimes it's an alfalfa, food plot where the alfalfa is green. It's giving them a lot of those nutrients that they need, to bulk up before the rut, or it could be, you know, a brassica mix. They really like radishes early season. So that's what I meant by not all food sources are equal, at least not during the year. So different times of the year, the soybeans are going to lose their attractiveness, and you want to have an alternate food source so that when the deer move off of the soybeans, they're still going to be on your property, and they still have an attractive food source.
Right.
So pair it with something green, like clover, right, or alfalfa, or brassicas.
Right. All right, so let me ask you this. What are your favorites for certain times of year? And I'm just going to say, I'm going to stay within the October 1st to early January hunting season. So let's say early season, you know, early to mid, even late October. What's your favorite food plot to sit on?
Well, if you have green soybeans, those are pretty hot in that early October area. Yeah. If you don't, clover is very attractive. Clover and alfalfa are very attractive early October, or even radishes. Those would be my main favorites for early bow season or pre-rut food sources.
Now we're getting into late October, the rut, maybe early to mid-November. What are we looking at now?
Well, one thing that I know a lot of food plot guys don't like this that happens is the mass crop starts falling in October, late October. So now when you've planted all these food plots, you're now competing against the acorns, and you'll see a lot of your deer start to disappear around this area or alternate their patterns. You might pick up that buck that comes to your place,
right,
looking for those oak trees. So that, you know, late October, try hunting around oak trees, a mass food source, or even some a brassica mix. If you have a brassica blend, that sometimes will pull them in too.
Gotcha. All right.
Especially after that first frost, we usually get that sometime in October, and that makes the sugars start to go to the bulb, and so then they become really appealing.
Okay.
To the wildlife, yeah.
Gotcha. All right. Now, what about this Thanksgiving into Christmas time frame?
Well, that can really vary in Iowa, but a lot of times, and I will have snow somewhere coming in there.
Yeah.
And when you have snow coming, you really can't beat a standing grain source like, you know, standing soybeans or standing corn. So you just really kind of flock to that.
Yeah, and I take it that goes all the way through into the late season as well, that standing grain?
Yeah, that's really key for late season. Is that something you've kind of witnessed?
Yeah, I mean, I don't have the luxury of hunting over any food plots, so any place I hunt is, if the crops are up, it's because the farmer didn't get them out, right? So I very rarely run into a position where the crops are still in, let's say, late December or January. And if they did, it would have been something like this year where we had a real wet harvest season and instantly went into snow, and they weren't able to get them out until, you know, late into the season, all dictated by weather, of course. So typically I don't, but this year I hunted some of my rut in a standing cornfield. I was actually in the cornfield. So,
how did that work out, can I ask?
Yeah, I saw, other than a lot of does, I saw a really good three-year-old and mostly young bucks, but I didn't see any mature, nothing four-year-old or over. None of my hit listers made it into that cornfield.
Okay.
So, And this was kind of a unique scenario. This particular cornfield held deer, but it didn't butt up against any main timber. So in order for the deer to get to it, they had to cross the road. And I'm sure the big bucks were in it, but not until after dark.
And that's kind of frustrating sometimes, too, when the corn becomes the habitat and they're just hiding in there.
Yeah, that's a fact. We did a rattling sequence. I brought my buddy Ryan with me, and we did a rattling sequence, and I slammed the antlers together to simulate a fight, and I must have scared some bedded deer that were in the corn about 20 to 50 yards away from us, and they all jumped up and ran away. So I think I was a little bit too aggressive with that move. All right, so We've kind of walked through the food sources there throughout the year. Myth number three, you need a lot of equipment to establish a food plot.
I feel like we kind of talked a little bit about this. You know, it's ideal if you have all this equipment and have, yeah, you know, a drill or a planter and a disc and a harrow. But, you know, don't underestimate frost seeding, because that's, you can do a lot with frost seeding, honestly.
Yeah.
Or even, you know, even just using an herbicide to spray down the grass and then seeding into that grass and trying to harrow it in. That's something you can do too.
Yeah. And nothing beats elbow grease, right? If you really want to save money and you really want to, I've talked to some guys who told me they borrowed their neighbor's rototiller and went out and did an entire acre of using a rototiller and broke up the dirt that way. He said his shoulders and arms were jello by the end of the day, but he got it done and he got the food plot planted.
Good for him. That's excellent. That's an excellent idea.
Yeah. All right. So here's something that we talked about before, a little bit before we started recording today. And that was planting soybeans later in the year will make them stay green longer. So I take it by what people mean by that is, hey, if I wait till August to plant my soybeans, come November, mid-November, they're going to be luscious and perfect, you know, just like they are typically in August.
Yeah, this is a myth I hear repeated quite often, and you're exactly right. Even some farmers kind of forget that soybeans are actually what they call photoperiodic. So that means they're just like trees. The sunlight triggers the trees to lose their leaves. Well, the same thing happens with the soybeans. Sunlight triggers the soybeans to start losing their leaves. So if you plant, I've actually seen soybeans planted about 3 inch high, and then they're starting to flower, because that's what the sun is telling them they need to do, is, hey, you need to flower to put on some pods so we can make a crop. So if you plant your soybeans even in July or August, they're not going, you know, unfortunately, they're not going to stay green longer. It's not like corn.
Yeah.
They're going to all kind of lose their leaves and mature at about the same time.
Right. I think that is a really big point that most people think that just because of the time of year means that this plant will peak when you want it to and not when it wants to.
Yeah, and if you want to try to get soybeans a little later in the year, you know, seed companies, they sell them by maturity group. And so what that means is you'll hear farmers talk about a group one or two soybean. Well, those mature earliest, and they're usually in the northern half of the state.
Right.
Group two and three soybeans mature a little bit later. And, you know, if you think about it, in the south, we can, south of 80, you can get away with a later maturing soybean because you don't have that frost coming and because it has a little bit longer daylight. So if you want a later maturing soybean, try planting a later variety. And if you go into like a co-op or talk with a seed salesman or specialist, they'll be able to help you pick out a later maturing variety.
Great advice.
That'll help.
Great advice. All right. Number five, food plots require a lot of maintenance.
Yeah, they sometimes it seems like they require a lot of maintenance, especially with, you know, clover, something that you're mowing or something that you're fertilizing. But we kind of talked about how attractive that mass crop was in Iowa around, you know, mid-October, whenever it starts falling, how that just really pulls deer. And really, once you get trees established, they're one of the lowest maintenance food plots you can have.
Yeah, that makes a lot of sense. You basically, a tree just sits there and does what it does.
Yeah, and actually, so when I moved to my little small acreage, they went and they logged all the oak trees. And, you know, that kind of, I really like oak trees because they're pretty and they attract a lot of animals. So I started doing some research and I found, there's sawtooth oak trees and they can start maturing or producing acorns in like 6 years. Whereas, our white or red oak trees, it can take them 20 or years or longer to produce acorns. So I did find that there, and then there's some hybrid oak trees, and a lot of these are crossed with red oak trees for whatever reason. They must grow fast. But hybrid oak trees can start dropping an attractive food source pretty quickly too, and as few as 3 years. So, and
I know that there is acorns on the properties that I hunt, right? But I always think, man, if I could do one thing to this property, like, I don't know if you ever played the video game Sim City where you could build a house in a specific location or build a mountain someplace. I always thought it would be cool if I could just move this oak tree into this one pinch point and then I would hunt, I would have the best possible tree stand location in North America if I could do that. And it sounds to me like planting trees, whether it's a oak tree or like a fruit tree, and putting it in the right location, having control of that would be a big deal.
yeah, that's an excellent thought. Yeah.
Well, anything else on food plots requiring a lot of maintenance?
Nope, they don't have to require a lot of maintenance, but they can. And trees are pretty low maintenance, and once you just get them established, they'll be good producers for you and an attractive food source.
All right. So number six, you can put a food plot anywhere. I already know the answer to this because I failed planning my food plot. I don't. I well, number one, I think I overseeded, and number two, I think it didn't get enough sun. All right. So, what's your take on being able to put a food plot anywhere?
Well, just like what you're saying, there's places in the timber where just sitting there, you think, if I had a food plot right here, I could attract every single animal and it'd be the hot spot. Every animal in the county would want to be right here. But you can't put a corn food plot in the timber. It won't get enough sunlight, unfortunately. And just if you're trying to, hunt bottom ground or a creek area, floodplain, there's a good chance that creek's going to come out and flood out your crop. So what can you plant in those wet areas? A lot of duck guys will plant Japanese millet because it's been bred to withstand flooding. So you might have to kind of adapt to your area to specify what you can plant in your area.
All right. Number seven, one small food plot will sustain your hunting needs.
I unfortunately made this error when I bought a small acreage. My first year, I thought, small acreage, I can do a small food plot. I didn't realize the amount of deer and the amount of pressure I would get. And I tried to plant soybeans, and they just got mowed off. I had probably a quarter acre food plot, and I saw deer out in them every single night when the soybeans were growing, but I don't think there were five soybeans left in that field come hunting season. Yeah, so I had to adapt, and that ended up being a brassica food plot. I overseeded with some brassicas just because the food plot was just too small to sustain the population.
I've heard, I had another buddy who did the same thing. He's like, man, he wanted this food plot ready for October, but what he didn't realize was that deer eat all the time, especially clover, all the time throughout the entire year. If it's green, it seems like clover is their go-to food source almost, and I say almost, over everything else throughout the year, right? If the
Yeah, you're right. Yeah.
if the green food source is lush, they're going to go to it. And his food plot got destroyed to where it didn't, but by the time October hit, it wasn't even a food source anymore. It was basically just stubble.
Wow.
Yeah.
It's pretty frustrating when that happens, but it's kind of neat because then you know you have a lot of deer and a lot of pressure.
Yeah. But
it's pretty frustrating because, again, clover seed isn't cheap.
Yeah. Absolutely. Absolutely. And then what was it this year? He ended up putting a fence around it. So he was able to control that. Now they went somewhere else, and he said this year he put a fence around it, and he was able to, I don't know if he shot a deer off of it or not, but he was able to control the consumption of it. Or no, what he did was he went half and half. So he cut the food plot in half. He gave them access to half of it, which they used and they destroyed. And then he opened up the second half of it in October. So, and then they were able to, you know, use it, and he was able to hunt over it as well.
Well, that's a pretty smart idea, because that way they know that, hey, there's food right here. And then, he gets to optimize it in October. That's awesome. Good idea.
Yeah, absolutely. All right. Number 8, dirt is dirt. What do you mean by that?
Well, I don't know if, hunting Iowa, I'm sure you've come across what we call like clayed knobs on the top of hills.
Yep.
And the top of ridge lines. And that's a lot of times where it works out well, because you'll have like a timber down at the bottom and you want to put a food plot in that clay knob. Well, unfortunately, clay isn't a good soil to grow food plots.
Yes.
Like soybeans hate compaction, and they hate heavy clay soils. They don't grow very tall, which we are putting them in for food plots. It's not like we're trying to grow 60 bushel beans, but you still want to have some food there for the deer. Unfortunately, you can't always take a clay knob and expect to have the best food plot
right
that first year. And it's tough for like brassicas too, because you'll have tiny stunted plants with tiny bulbs on it. And it's especially frustrating to talk to your friend down the road that has, you know, a food plot in the bottom ground and it's just doing awesome. It can get discouraging. You think you're doing something wrong, but really it's not necessarily anything you did. It was the site. It was the soil's fault.
Yeah. So is it,
on my food plots, I do them once in a while, especially if you farm, if you're trying to put in a food plot near a gravel road, that can really surprise you with how high the pH is, which means the lime from the road comes and it basically limes it. And so what happens is you don't have the pH levels control what nutrients are available to that plant. So we want our pHs generally to be between like 6.5 to 7 is pretty much optimal, because when you get your pHs too high or too low, the nutrients and all that money you spend on fertilizer isn't being used because it's unavailable to that plant. So you should do, soil tests probably every 5 years or so, but it's up to you.
Yeah.
But I'd recommend doing it maybe every couple of years or so.
Gotcha. Have you ever had a scenario where you go in, you put all the work into the food plot, and maybe you didn't do a soil sample test and it didn't grow like you wanted it to because you either used the wrong fertilizer or you didn't fertilize it at all?
Yeah. One place on my dad's, it was on a gravel road, and we honestly thought that the pH test was wrong and went and redid it. And both times it came back as 8, which is extremely high, especially for Iowa. But what happened was that gravel road went and it limed it. So the plants, they weren't getting the nutrients they needed. Another scenario, can I throw this out too?
Yeah, absolutely.
On my uncle's field, we thought his plants were kind of stunted the year before, and he thought his pH was off and he wanted to go and correct it. And he'd been liming his field every, you know, every year he gets a load of lime dumped on it and works it in. Well, we found out his pH was right, so there was a pathogen. We ended up finding out that was stunting the growth, but at least we could rule out it wasn't the pH.
Wow. What's a pathogen? Like a disease for the plants?
Yeah, like a disease like fungus or virus or even like bugs.
Yeah. Were you able to get rid of it?
Yeah, actually, if you rotate a different crop 1 or 2 years, you're able to get rid of a lot of pests or pathogens. Yeah.
Okay, cool. All right, so paying attention to the dirt is very important, obviously, because that's where the plant grows. All right.
Yeah.
All right, number 9, food plots require a lot of space.
Yeah, this is, I don't know, you've heard of till plots, right?
Yes.
And till plots are kind of a small...
strategically placed food plot that's smaller,
yeah,
somewhere before like the destination food plot.
Correct. Yeah. But if you don't have enough space, I've even heard of guys having, you know, just 3 acres and doing a clover, either a clover trail or a clover food plot. And that way you're not giving up a lot of area and you're still, something's got to cover your ground.
Yeah.
You know, whether it's grass or clover, it's up to you. But if you put clover on there, like you were saying, even in the snow, they'll try to dig down to it. The deer will and access that clover.
Right. Okay. I mean, that's just almost relative to the amount of space you have access to plant food plots on, right? If you own a 1,000-acre farm or you have access to 1,000 acres, you're probably going to have access to more food plot options. If you own a 5-acre piece, you're going to be limited to the amount of, you know, food plots space that you can, you know, say this area is going to be food plots, right? So
yep.
It's all relative to the size of the property you have access to. So, yeah, that's pretty self-explanatory. All right. Number 10 says here, species and variety selection is not important. What do you mean by that?
Pretty much what I was referring to is tannin levels of different plants. And so just real quick, what tannins are, have you ever eaten a grape with seeds in them? And to me, that's very disappointing because you think you're eating, this sweet treat, a grape, and then you crunch into the seed and you get this bitter taste and it just kind of flows throughout your mouth and makes your teeth feel different. Well, that bitter taste of the seeds is because it's full of tannins. And so tannins are natural organic compounds and they just have a bitter taste and they're not attractive. They're less attractive to wildlife. Just like I'm still going to eat grapes, but I'd rather have seedless grapes. Just that same thought. Well, tannins are often, present in like higher levels in stuff that has red colors. So if you think of like crimson clover versus white clover, that white clover is going to be a little bit sweeter than the crimson clover. So if you're trying to maximize your food plots or even try to pull deer away from your neighbor's food plots, try planting like a white clover versus a crimson clover or red clover, or even sorghum or millet varieties. You can plant white millet, white sorghum instead of the red varieties. And it's just going to make it a little more sweeter and a little more attractive to the wildlife.
There you go. That's a lot of information packed into a short little podcast. So let me ask you this. One of the last questions I have for you is, what is something that you're going to recommend or any words of advice that you would like to bestow on us to someone who is maybe planning a food plot for the first time this year?
If you're planning a food plot for the first time this year, just don't get discouraged and make it happen. The worst thing you can do is not do it because you'll be hunting all next season, which is a good October through January, and you'll be sitting there thinking, I wish I would have had a food plot. So just go out there and just try to do it.
There you go. Give it a try. If it's something, and I'll be honest with you, it's something I definitely want to keep trying and working on, or and finding the time and the energy to do it, because I know I can find someone to help me with maybe some of the equipment. And I know I have some property that I have access to. It's probably just a matter of talking to the landowner. But a food plot is definitely something that is, I think, more about as the older I get, because obviously we all know that deer are a slave to their stomach, especially during the late season when they're like, especially this year, right? I mean, I'm sure the standing grain that you had last season played a huge role in even probably the survival of the deer herd on the farms you hunt.
Yeah, very much so. Even you were talking about not owning land and getting access from landowners. And a lot of time, landowners are okay with you planting clover, especially if they have cattle, because what you're doing is you're improving their area.
Yeah.
So if you don't own land, it's okay. Go talk to that landowner and see if you can cross-seed in some clover, or see if you can try to seed in some clover. It'll help you, and it's going to help them.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, Jessica, I really appreciate you taking time out of your day to chat with us today and drop some knowledge about food plots.
Yeah, I appreciate it. Thanks for having me.
And there you have it. A lot of information in this podcast about food plots. Hopefully you guys are able to take away some of the knowledge that Jessica shared with us. Huge fan of really in-depth knowledge like that, and hopefully you guys are too. Just like I said at the beginning of the podcast, man, please go visit iowasportsman.com. Check out all the content that they have on their website and subscribe to the magazine, because there's tons of great info there as well. Be sure to follow us on Facebook, Iowa Sportsman, easy to find. All you got to do is search for it. And then if this is the first time you're ever listening to one of these podcasts, man, go to iTunes, subscribe, leave a review. 5 stars would be awesome. And on top of all that, hopefully everybody has a great rest of your week. I'm really looking forward to doing some mushroom hunting. And I might already have a mushroom hunt or two under my belt by the time this podcast launches. So if you're going to go out, stay away from the poison ivy. Good luck the rest of the spring, whether you're hunting for mushrooms, hunting for turkey, or fishing. And we'll talk to you next week.